I asked the driver where he was headed.
Kolya,
he answered. The longer mixed passenger cargo train was bound for another place called Imnash. The next icebreaker, we knew, was scheduled to leave from Kolya in 31 hours. So, having agreed on a price, I heaved my backpack down into the one-sledge train and became its third passenger. According to custom, I paid the driver half of the agreed-on fare up front and kept the other half in my pocket, payable on arrival. For another quarter of an hour, he jockeyed for position along both flanks of the train and managed to collect one more passenger on the right side. By that point, no one remained on the catwalks. All of the little sledge trains peeled away from the big one as if they had received a common signal. I reckoned we must be drawing close to the outpost where the inspectors would board the train. At 50 feet, we could barely see the giant train. At 100, it was invisible. A minute after that, even the throbbing of its power plant had been muffled by the snow and drowned out by the higher-pitched note of our little train's motor. This was hardly the sort of thing I'd had in mind when I'd walked out of the chancel at the Big Voco 2 weeks earlier. Even when I'd made the decision to follow Orlo over the pole, I hadn't dreamed that the last leg of the journey was going to be like this. If someone had told me back at Samble that I was going to have to go on a ride like this one, I'd have come up with an excuse not to and gone straight to Tredegar. What wouldn't have been clear to me, though, back in Samble, was just how routine this all was. People did it all the time. All I needed to do was kill 24 hours, which was how long it would take for this contraption to reach the sea. We four passengers sat on a pair of sideways-facing benches that could have accommodated 8. We all looked about the same in our suit sacks. Mine was new compared to theirs, even though I'd been living in it for a week. Despite the trouble we had gone to outfit me with desperate-looking baggage, mine still gleamed in comparison with the first two passengers. Polly's shopping bags bound up with poly twine and reinforced with poly tape. The last passenger had an old suitcase bound up in a neat gridwork of yellow rope. The first two called themselves Lero and Dag. The last was Braj, all of these being reasonably common extramuros names. I said my name was Vit. Further conversation was difficult over the engine noise, and in any case, these guys didn't seem very talkative. Lero and Dag huddled together under a blanket. I had the idea that they were brothers. Braj, having entered last, sat closest to the flaps in the rear. Between his bulk, he was a little bigger than I, and his clumsy suitcase, he claimed a lot of space. But it was space that we were glad to let him have because of the snow that swirled in from the sledge's coiling wake. I had left all my books with Cord. No one had a spiele. Playing cards was impossible while wearing mittens. There was nothing to see outside but swirling snow. I set my catalytic heater to the lowest power level that would keep my digits alive, folded my arms, propped my legs up on my pack, slumped down on the wooden bench, and tried not to think about how slowly time was passing.